We're at the Palm Coast City Hall for the regularly scheduled Palm Coast City Council meeting. Please rise and join me in a pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Roll call, please.
Mayor Metz.
Here.
Vice Mayor Shipley.
Here.
Councilmember DiLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember Nobile.
Here.
Councilmember McGuire is excused tonight.
First item on our agenda is the approval of the minutes of the May 17th City Council meeting and the May 31st City Council workshop. Are there any additions, corrections, or is there a motion to approve?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number two, presentation on long-term financial planning. Mr. Landon.
Good morning, or good afternoon.
The third one has said good morning coming in here today, myself included.
This is another one of our segments in our budget preparation and financial disclosures. I would start off by saying that we received notice today that we received the annual Distinguished Budget Award again. Lena's name is all over that, with obviously the help from a number of people. So congratulations to Lena and Chris and the rest of the finance staff and all the departments. That is quite an honor. So Lena, I think, or Chris, I'm not sure who's going to take it from here, but please.
Good evening.
January, February, March, and April. Tonight's presentation on long-term financial planning is the second of three in our budget preparation series that takes place during the months of May and June. And in July, we'll begin our budget workshops, and that'll continue into the month of August. And we'll cap that off with our public hearings in September. And then we'll begin closing out the current fiscal year after October. Tonight's presentation is just to discuss a little background as well as the goals and objectives for long-term financial planning. We're going to discuss the assumptions that are used when we're creating this plan each year, as well as the deliverables or the way that we publish the actual plan each year. And we will take a look at the forecast for our major funds as well. So a little background on the long-term financial planning process. The goal is to align our financial capacity with our long-term objectives. It's a very important part of our strategic planning process, and it helps us to establish the foundation for our strategies that are being developed and also to help us achieve long-term financial sustainability. We do have a long-term planning policy. This document, as well as our long-term financial plan, which is updated each year, is available on the city's website, palmcoastgov.com, on the finance page. We also publish other long-term planning documents, which can be found there as well. Some objectives of our long-term financial plan is to look out 5 years, at least 5 years, and consider all of our funds, all of our appropriated funds. It also provides some direction to the budget process by looking at the current financial environment, as well as forecasts for our revenues and expenditures. Some additional objectives are to continue to improve the city's financial position and also to enhance the long-term financial sustainability of the city. We also hope to help achieve the objectives that are documented in our strategic action plan. Some of the assumptions that we consider when we're updating the plan each year: projections for revenues and expenditures is obviously something that we take a long time looking at. We also consider any available revenue sources that aren't currently being used, any deficits or surpluses that are being anticipated, the condition of our fund balance or reserves in our funds, economic growth and what the local economy, the condition of the local economy is, historical trends, and then any rate increases that are being considered for the future. We also consider any anticipated operational changes, as well as the state of our disaster reserves and the sustainability of our current expenditures. Some of the ways that we publish the long-term plan each year is through our annual budget document, as well as the budget at a glance. As Mr. Landon mentioned earlier, with the GFOA budget presentation award, one of the sections, the scoring sections, I should say, is specifically related to long-term planning. We also produce our annual and quarterly progress report, as well as the annual financial report, also known as the CAFR, and our 10-year and 5-year capital plans.
Okay, I get to play with the graphs now. This first graph that you're looking at is a forecast of our general fund. We have a number of these forecasts, both month to month, year to year, and then looking into the future. What you're looking at here, the blue line actually represents our forecasted revenues, and our red line our forecasted expenditures. These are based on the assumptions that we put into the model, such as a CPI increase for operating expenses, anticipated increase in assessed taxable values, any kind of other major tax revenues. We put in any kind of other related CPI increases or potential decreases, as well as increases in personnel costs. What you start to see looking out and beyond 2017 is that the expense line, which is a red dotted line, starts to exceed available revenues, which is the blue line projected out. Again, a lot of our general fund, is primarily financed by property taxes, which is about 50% of the general fund revenues. And this doesn't really take into account any changes to the millage rate. It assumes that the millage rate is going to stay the same, which may or may not be practical in the future, but it just gives us a sense that we know that we're going to have to address either the general fund services that are provided or the revenues as we move forward into the future.
What's the growth on the property taxes?
2.3% increase in assessed value.
That's taxable.
Right, that goes down to the taxable value. Most of our, it's hard to forecast the commercial growth. Mm-hmm. Again, the taxable value of residential property is capped at a maximum of 3% per year. It's actually the greater of 3% the lesser of 3% of the CPI. Our CPI has actually been less than 3% over the last several years, and that's why we use the 2.3%.
And that's existing, not new.
That's primarily existing. We do factor in new taxable value into the calculation, but that's been a very, very small percentage over the last several years of our actual taxable value. Okay. So, again, this is kind of a conservative projection, but if we were to have a sudden spurt in taxable value growth, that would affect both the expenses and the revenues both. This is our utility fund forecast. Again, CPI and personnel increases the same as the previous forecast. And the water and wastewater sales, we're projecting per the capital finance plan when we were looking at projected increases in population. You can really see from 2017 forward, and I'm gonna try and do our little thing here, I hope, which is here from this point. Basically forward, you can see that the blue line is a little bit greater than the red line. The blue line being revenues is a little bit greater than the expense line. That's the amount that's built in for the new SRSF loan that we've talked about, how the future FRS loan payments are covered by the existing projected revenues. That will actually come closer once the loan payments are actually factored into our projection. But I just thought it was interesting. I wanted to be able to kind of show, and you can see that our projections left that amount in there for that anticipated loan that we had to take out.
And beginning in 2017, we've also included in our projections anticipated operating expenses for the second wastewater plant. So that's included in the projections as well.
And 15 to 16, what happened there?
What you're kind of seeing there is the 15, that's the actual,
right,
versus the actual expenditures. We actually came in considerably lower than the actual revenues in terms of our expenditures in 15. Those funds were part of our capital financing plan, were put into the capital projects fund to be able to have the cash to be able to pay for future capital projects. And the large spike in 13, which again is kind of right here, that's when we had refinanced the 2003 bonds and received the additional financing that was applied to capital projects, which went primarily towards the ZLD project. This is our stormwater fund forecast. This one's interesting because it's a combination of a capital fund and an operating fund. About 57% of the fund is considered operating and 43% capital. Our stormwater fees, even with increases in population, don't increase that much because most vacant platted parcels pay about three-quarters of the normal fee that a actually built-on parcel would pay. So we kind of build that into our that growth into our projections. The dip that you see here in these couple of years here, and those are based on actuals, and that's because the amounts that we actually apply to the capital fund get eliminated from the operating view. It's a more complicated accounting stuff, but nothing to be concerned about. But going forward, what you see is, and this is something that we really already know, is we have more projects than we actually have revenue for as we move forward, and we continue to try to work within the known revenues that we have each year and modify that capital program to push some of those projects out further into the future. And this again is something that we deal with each year at budget time to kind of bring those lines back into sync. One of the other issues with stormwater, unlike our utility revenues and our impact fees, is there's no indexing to the fee. So every year we lose a little bit to inflation because the fee stays the same. It doesn't really change with inflation like our other fees, which is something else that we'll be bringing in future workshops to talk to City Council about.
Chris?
Yes.
How much ad valorem do we have in this fund this current year?
About $370,000.
Okay.
Now, this is pretty quick. Next year, it looks like we're going to be in a deficit there.
It's pretty much, again, it's related to the capital projects that we have to do in stormwater.
But when are we going to deal? Are we going to look at that in this right now in the budget to see how we can reduce that? We don't need to take the whole thing, right? We can adjust the capital projects and potentially increase so we can do something but not fill the entire gap.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. And what we've been doing is each year during the budget process, we know that there's that gap, and we've been trying to work through that gap during each year's budget process.
Okay, and just a look ahead, we'll be back in just a couple of weeks for our last presentation in the budget preparation series. We'll be discussing revenue sources and property taxes, and then July 12th, we'll kick off our first budget workshop with the general fund.
And you'll see more of these forecasting models. We did quite a bit of modeling last year when we were considering expanding the stormwater program last year. We brought in some modeling that we worked with City Council on to show what the long-term impact of some of those decisions would be. And we'll bring those forward again as we go through those in July and August.
Any questions?
Answer questions. Anything?
No, sir. I ask you a question.
Not now. Okay, thank you very much. Agenda item number 3, ordinance to amend and restate the European Village Master Plan development. Mr. Reichman.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Excuse me. This is an ordinance to the City Council, City of Palm Coast, Florida, providing for the amended and restated Master Plan Development, or MPD, development agreement for the European Village Master Plan Development, or MPD, between European Village and the City of Palm Coast. This ordinance provides for commercial or COM2 uses, provides for a signage plan, for revised special event standards, and provides for conflicts, legislative findings, and intent. This ordinance provides for the taking of implementing administrative actions. It repeals all conflicting ordinances, and it provides for severability and non-codification, and provides for an effective date. Mr. Mayor, this is second reading. This is quasi-judicial, so if there's been any ex parte communications since the first hearing on this matter, those should be disclosed at this time.
Any additional ex parte communications?
No, sir.
Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is a second reading. It's something that we've actually been working on for quite some time. And it is one of those that Much like Island Walk, we're seeing revitalization of some of our commercial areas. And this is, in my opinion, real excited because it's not just commercial, it's also the residential area. We have nothing further to add. We believe it's ready for final action. Staff is here to answer any questions you may have.
Council questions? Seeing none, we'll open the meeting for the public. And from the public, wish to be heard on agenda item number 3.
Steve Carr, Palm Coast. I'm just curious about what all the problems have been with the European Village, but I can say that somehow it looks like the traffic that was diverted down Florida Park Drive could have gone by the European Village. That would have been about 8,000 cars per day, you know, and it would help give a boost to their sales and businesses over there. But for some reason, that traffic's been diverted down a residential area of Florida Park Drive. I don't know that much about the European Village or any of that. I just know about what the traffic is. And the traffic on Florida Park Drive is too much. It needs to use the intersection of Palm Coast Parkway and Palm Harbor Parkway for the interchange of traffic between the two parkways. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. Don't approach the podium. We'll close the public portion meeting. Go back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move approval of agenda item number 3, an ordinance to amend and restate the European Village Master Plan Development.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor Shipley?
Yes.
Councilmember DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Councilmember Nobile?
Yes.
Mayor Nets?
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passed 4-0.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 4, resolution approving the new traffic signal project in the amount not to exceed $125,350 at Old Kings Road and Town Center Boulevard. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is one of those projects that is indicative of some of the growth we're seeing down in the southern area. It's actually a temporary signal because, as you all know, Old Kings Road is scheduled to be widened to 4-lane from where it terminus of the 4-lane is just south of this intersection on up to Palm Coast Parkway. But in the meantime, we have traffic that really backs up a long, long ways, and so this is our temporary solution for that, something that we've heard a lot of requests about, and Sean is going to walk us through the details.
Okay. I'm just coming to you to discuss the new signal at Old Kings Road and Town Center Boulevard.
Can you speak a little closer to the microphone, please?
I apologize.
Thank you.
The objective of this is to get City Council approval for the construction of a new signal over at Old Kings and Town Center Boulevard. We made sure that this falls in line with our strategic action plan, and it does specifically objective 5.2, which is to enhance safety measures throughout the community. A little background about the area. Old Kings Road and Town Center Boulevard, currently this is an unsignalized intersection that only has a stop condition on Town Center Boulevard itself. It does have a marked crosswalk for a Lehigh Trail to cross to get to the Lehigh Trail on the south side of the intersection. Average daily traffic volumes in the area on both Town Center and Old Kings are between 6,800 and 7,800 vehicles per day. As Mr. Landon stated earlier, we do experience significant delays, especially on Town Center Boulevard during the peak travel times here. Over the last 3 years, that we have experienced about 10 crashes, specifically angle crashes here at this intersection. And because of the volumes at this intersection, it does meet signal warrants 1, 2, and 3. Just to restate a little bit of what Mr. Landon said, in the future, Old Kings Road will be 4-laned. That'll be its future configuration. The Town Center Boulevard will be realigned just slightly to the south. When the And when it does get realigned, this will become a full intersection utilizing mast arms, and there'll be turn lanes and everything. And like it was said before, it's going to be done with the Old Kings Road widening project. But in the meantime, something does need to be done now, so we would install a temporary traffic signal. It would be two poles and a span wire. There would be new pedestrian signal heads to allow people to cross the intersection to continue onto the trail. We would, to make it safe, we would be having to close down the existing makeshift parking area, and we would do that utilizing landscaping. And an alternative parking area would be moved to the northeast corner of the bridge. As you can see here in this graphic, you'll see what the signal would look like. It's, like I stated earlier, two poles and a span wire. Some of the proposed landscaping improvements, north is actually facing, just that way.
to our left.
Everybody's yeah, to our left. to our left. I apologize. And as you can see on the southwest corner there, you'll see where we do plan on using 4x4 posts, and they're going to be spaced about 5 feet apart, and in between that there's going to be some dense shrubbery, and that would effectively create a block to eliminate that vehicle parking. And the same thing would be done on the northeast corner of the bridge. 4x4 posts spaced every 5 feet apart with dense shrubbery to create that buffer, so that way folks hopefully don't drive into the canal.
Mr. Mayor?
They will.
Mr. Mayor? Any question?
Lorenzo.
There's going to be posts on the Lehigh Trail where there's currently parking, or where people currently park.
Yes.
Right? Not just on the road, right along the road, but also along the trail side as well.
Yes.
Why there? Why not just put a bollard in the middle of the trail itself, so you know vehicle access couldn't go down the trail, and do it with one pole instead of a bunch of 4x4 poles?
We looked at that. The problem is that people still have the ability to drive around that. So we wanted to make sure that we block off the whole thing. And I mean, because just in my own observations standing out there, I would see folks that would actually pull off even before they got to the trail, just south there, and they would just turn off and follow the side of the trail and then turn into the parking area if there was something there that was blocking them from being able to get in.
Okay. Well, what's the intention? What's the look going to be? Is it that the shrubbery will, I mean, the poles will be there to make sure the car is going to go through, but the focus will be the shrubbery will fill it in, so we're not looking at a bunch of poles?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
But you still have to have pedestrian and bicycle access between those poles.
No, because it's parallel with the trail.
Yeah.
You're going parallel.
Yes.
Okay. Additional council questions?
None.
Open the meeting to the public. Anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 4?
I guess you're done, Sean.
Jack Town, Palm Coast. If this is going to be a temporary, it's going to cost us $125,000. When the road is finished, is that going to be another $125,000 or more? Because it'll be a different type of traffic light, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm just wondering if it's going to be more money later on, or if that's going to be like a deductible.
We got an answer to your question. Next speaker.
Hi, I'm Larry Coletti from Palm Coast. I use that intersection quite often. My major concern as a cyclist and a pedestrian, I know we talked about vehicle stuff, but I'd like to see that light configured so that when the crosswalk button is pushed, that all the other lights stay red, and there's a no right turn coming off of the, Town Center Boulevard. Because people, when they look at a light, they don't look at the crosswalk or the people in the crosswalk. So I'd like to see that, you know, stay red until that crossing cycle is complete and that there's no right turn on red. Okay, that's one of my major concerns. That's a very, very dangerous intersection if you're a pedestrian or a cyclist because the car's coming up. Old Kings are doing 50-plus miles an hour, and they're not slowing down. So I don't want to be dead right out there, okay? So thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Rob McDonald, Palm Coast. My friend Jack just beat me to one part of my question. If we're going to spend $125,000 to put a temporary light up, I'd like to know how much we paid to put that new temporary blacktop. By the way, that blacktop is an excellent job. But if we're going to have to rip that up, what was the purpose of us even putting down the new blacktop? Plus now we're going to spend $125,000 to put a temporary light. How long is that temporary light going to be there? And then we're going to have to repave the road and put a permanent light at that intersection. Thank you.
I'll try to get an answer for your question. Next speaker. If you don't approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting. Go back to council. The first question, $125,000 for a temporary traffic light. At some point, there's going to be a permanent traffic light. The current one is a strain wire configuration. The permanent one will be a mast arm. The question was asked at the workshop, what, if any, of the $125,000 expenditure can be applied to the permanent traffic signal?
I would probably have to say about a third of it,
A third.
Because we will be able to keep
the box
and the equipment to run it. But we would also be able to keep whatever equipment, you know, that is with that goes along with that signal as well. So even if it does get taken down, we can keep it.
The question about the pedestrian crossing, right on red, right on green, so on and so forth, can you address how that's going to be structured, how that's going to be timed?
We can look at different options for that, and we can look at, for example, when people are crossing the most, so that way we can provide that for them. And then, obviously, during the busier times of day, you know, we can have it set up so that way it stays red for when folks want to cross. But that's just a simple.
That's just red.
Yeah, it's a simple task of just figuring out when people are utilizing the trail the most and then programming in the best times to have that in.
There is no straight traffic there. Everything's either going left or right off of Town Center. Hey, right. Stunt that.
Yes, sir.
So, first, are the lights going to, if someone pushes the walk, are both going to go red? Or, because the Town Center red, if we leave that green, we're going to have, you know, a close to 50-50 split between mm-hmm. going right and left. That still makes it dangerous to, You know, I'm trying to figure out how would you have a walk? The light would have to be red.
Well, let me.
Yeah, but you got to go. You don't have straight traffic here. Remember that. You got 50% of the traffic making a right turn.
Right. Let me, because it's counterintuitive.
You want people walking or riding their bike across that crosswalk along the trail when the light's green. Let me explain why.
Okay.
It's because the most dangerous thing is when the light's red and people are turning right on a red because they're strictly looking left.
Yeah, but I think that's what his point was specifically to a no right turn signal.
But when it is green, they're looking in front of them, which means they're looking at the pedestrian and the bicyclist. And most of them are going to yield. Furthermore, if you give it strictly a green for the pedestrian and you say no right turn on red, drivers are creatures of habit, and some of them are going to right turn on red, that pedestrian is going to think, oh, I've got total right-of-way here, and you're still going to have the person look left, see nobody coming, and turn right into them. So it is maybe counterintuitive, but you want the bicyclist and the motorist have them green together so that the motorist is more likely to see the bicyclist.
Now, I'm going to give you from experience, because I ride up there a lot. I'm riding just as fast as the cars are moving when I'm coming up that path, because they're not going fast down that, you know, that once they get under that bridge, they're pretty much going 15, 20 miles an hour, and that's what I'm doing. And we both, if I see a green light, somebody's got to have a stop.
I ride it a lot too, and I know, and I, you know, you have to right now at the stop sign. As a pedestrian, you're going to have a stop hand.
There's going to be a stop for them.
Yes.
Okay.
So you and you're supposed to stop until that motorist gets the green. Okay.
Right.
And
well,
the motorist,
but what if it's already green? And you see what I'm saying?
You as a bicyclist will have the stop.
Okay, we'll have the stop.
Unless you're trying to squeeze right by it, but at that point
you're on your own.
Yeah.
But so somebody will be needing to, they will have the, you need to stop.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That's good. As long as it's not just green for everybody to go.
But also what Sean said is anytime you do something different and new and those type of things, he spends a lot of time out there watching.
Yeah.
And he will make adjustments as needed, but you don't want to give pedestrian the sense that, okay, I've got the street and I'm good.
Yes.
Because motorists, particularly those who are in a hurry, they will turn, and you can put a sign up that says no right turn on red. Yeah.
Well, I wasn't thinking a sign, I was thinking those bars come out of the road.
Yeah. There's a lot of experience on these type of things, and we will do the best we can do to make it as safe as possible.
Yes,
also, just to kind of further highlight that, one of the reasons why we're blocking off the makeshift parking across the way is because those people wouldn't have any signals or anything, and that would be a free-for-all. And we're, the other thing, Mr. DeLorenzo, if I could add, the bollards we put in there are fairly flexible. And particularly with pickups, they just run right through them, and they run right down the path, and then they'll go park there. And then after they knock it down once, and everybody else follows them in.
Yeah.
So you just have to learn from, you know, driver behavior as to how to try to address those. And I think Sean and his team is working hard to make it as safe as possible, and we'll continue to monitor it to do so.
Putting my life in your hands, Sean.
It's a tall task.
The last question had to do with a temporary signal and, quote, temporary paving of Old Kings Road. And at some point, Old Kings Road will be four-laned, and at some point, the temporary signal will become a permanent signal. That section of Old Kings Road, from essentially Town Center Boulevard to Palm Coast Parkway, is to be paid for by a special assessment district. That's not going to come out of taxpayer dollars or DOT dollars, I don't believe. That will be dependent, those dollars will be generated as if and when the property owners along Old Kings Road develop those property and pay essentially impact fees. Anybody's guess is as good as anybody else's as to when that will be. I don't foresee it in the near future. and the old paving at Old Kings Road was sufficiently degraded that you had to do this for driver safety and for convenience. But when that will be done, there's really no way of predicting.
Mayor, if I could add to that, too, is that the bridge here is the most expensive part of that.
Yep.
And our, the plan with that district is to add the two lanes at the bridge first, basically from where it ends of four lanes just south of this intersection up to the Hidden Lakes area. Which is just north of the canal. That in itself is going to be major dollars that will take years probably before they're ready to go. So before we actually go from just north of this bridge all the way up to Palm Coast Parkway is additional years. So you're probably, you know, who knows, but 5 to 10 years. By that time, there won't be any question about the fact that the overlay wasn't a waste. I'd also add that this this stretch of Old Kings Road, and City Council heard this frequently, was the biggest complaints we heard. And we tried to delay it with the idea that maybe we could, the district would take off, but there's just no way right now. So, and then the signal improvements, the way Sean did this, was, once again, a lot of the more expensive elements of the signal can be transferred to the new signal. So we're trying to do this as efficiently as possible with the idea it's all temporary.
Just an observation, when that bridge is replaced or expanded or whatever they do with it, currently you have a shoulder, a pedestrian shoulder on the bridge. I would hope that when that bridge is replaced, there will be a separation of some sort.
Always, yes, absolutely.
If I can add, Mr. McDonald, we waited as long as we could to repave that. We started getting complaints a good, I want to say, 4 years ago, three and a half, 4 years ago, and we waited as long as we could, and we also made sure we got utility project done in that area before, so we didn't have to affect the area twice. It was overdue, needed to be done. I was a big proponent to try to wait, but the district just wasn't coming along fast enough, and we had to do it.
I have one question for Sean, Mr. Mayor. Okay. Sean, what kind of interruption are we going to get in that area when we put that light up, traffic-wise?
Honestly, it's not going to be that bad at all.
Okay.
Because, like I had stated last week when Mr. McGuire was asking about it, there's going to be certain times of the day where we're going to be running a fixed time.
Okay.
So
your question was related to the actual construction.
Oh, okay. I apologize. Honestly, all the work is going to be done with off of the road, so okay. I don't expect
just
any.
Just when they hang the mast and that, or the string.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, it really shouldn't back up. It shouldn't cause any backups whatsoever on
good.
Old Kings Road.
Additional council questions, comments, or a motion?
Move approval of agenda item number 4, resolution approving the new traffic signal project in the amount not to exceed $125,350 at Old Kings Road and Town Center Boulevard.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries that objection. Agenda item number 5, resolution approving an FDOT local agency program supplemental agreement for additional funding in the amount of $1,130,000 for the right-of-way acquisition phase of the Old Kings Road widening project. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this was something we added to the agenda. You did not see at your workshop because FDOT agreed to include that in their this grant in their current fiscal year, which ends June 30th. This is the Old Kings Road widening north of Palm Coast Parkway, or actually just the whole intersection of Palm Coast Parkway north up to Forest Grove. It's our highest priority project that FDOT has agreed to pay for or fund, primarily so people will use this local street from Palm Coast Parkway up to Matanzas Woods Parkway and try to have not everybody use the interstate in that area. So they consider it part of almost like a frontage road. FDOT has approved the design funding that we are in the process right now. In fact, just yesterday I was told that we received 90% construction drawings, which means it's kind of the final review phase. During that process, the engineers determine any additional right-of-way or additional city property that is needed to be able to complete the construction as per the design. And so as a result of now that the design is near completion, they've provided us with a number of parcels that we need, primarily small. A lot of them are easements. I asked them what were the main causes for needing additional right-of-way there, and I really like the answers. I want to share that with City Council and the public. Two things from a traffic standpoint. One of them was instead of adding turn lanes in the future, particularly right turn lanes, kind of what we see in Beltair, they've included them in this project so that we can get people who are turning right. I mean, the left turn will be there with the median and everything. But people turning right, it's nice to get that traffic off of the through lanes.
Right away.
And they've included that in this design.
So it's a miracle-like kind of, right? I mean, you get it.
So, but that at that point, because you have more lanes, you have to sometimes get additional right-of-way, usually a small strip. The other thing is anytime you have four-lane divided, you limit access, obviously. You can't end out every driveway, so there are U-turns that happen. Mm. And from experience, we all know that the worst thing that happens is you try to do a U-turn and your tire hits the curb and you got to back up. So at the request of our staff, we've asked them to do little kind of additional bump outs so that there is plenty of turning radiuses even for like delivery trucks. Or there's a right turn lane that they would flow into. Those are kind of design features that then, once again, need a little additional right-of-way. But I think something very important as far as traffic safety and flow. The third item that is not uncommon, it's drainage easements. You know, with our swells and this will have an underground drainage system and curb and gutter. But there's always the ditches and the swales and the retention that go along with the drainage. And so there's some drainage easements that are required. FDOT is committed to funding this project. And now that they know what the right-of-way cost is, they have agreed to include in this year's budget, which was unanticipated, the full amount. They had $60,000 already that we knew we were going to need down close to Palm Coast Parkway. But now that we know the full amount, about 1.2, they've added that to this year's budget. This agreement is between the City of Palm Coast and FDOT, which is one of their requirements that says, okay, here's a grant, but you have to follow our conditions and requirements, which is standard. So this is a standard FDOT agreement to take us to that next step after design is finished and we can move on next few months with right-of-way acquisition.
One question, Mr. Landon. There was a statement made, and I'm not going to say by who, that said this was based on miscalculations by the city. And can you just address that for a second? Make that clear.
Well, okay, now I'll get into the complicated part, because in order to say miscalculation, there's actually two, well, now let me rephrase that. There are three Old Kings Road projects north of Palm Coast Parkway. This widening and then the extension, and the extension is from Forest Grove up to Matanzas Woods Parkway. And that's phase one. And then phase two of the extension is from Matanzas Woods Parkway, curving back around and tying back into Old Kings Road north there. I think everybody that lives up in that area now knows that the Old Kings Road extension from Forest Grove to Matanzas Woods has been temporarily opened, and it's near completion, and that's fully funded, and that's all been funded by FDOT. Phase two has also been fully funded by FDOT. And the design is 80-90% complete also, if not totally complete. It's very close to being complete, if not totally. So we now know what right-of-way we need for that project. Because that's when you really determine is, you know, either
when,
the
right.
final design. You have an estimate ahead of time lots of times. The engineers will look at it and go, okay, we know here or there. So FDOT had $600,000 in this year's budget for right-of-way for the Phase 2 extension.
This is the infamous $600,000.
This is the infamous $600,000. What happened was, is during the design, the change that occurred is prior to design, we do four-lane divided. So our preliminary plan showed four-lane divided all the way up to where it ties back into Old Kings Road, north of Matanzas Woods Parkway. The engineer said, you know, when you go north on Old Kings Road and you hit Matanzas Woods Parkway, most people are either going to turn right or they're going to turn left. And very few people are going to continue up, and then you're going to go from four-lane down to two-lane. It really makes more sense to narrow it down to two-lane right north of the intersection of Matanzas Woods Parkway. So, and then it will continue two lanes all the way to US 1. So as a result of that design feature that it's just going to be two lanes, we didn't need nearly as much right-of-way. So the right-of-way went from an estimation and budget of $600,000 to $40,000. Okay, so now, as a result of that narrowing down to two lanes, there was $560,000 that FDOT had budgeted for the Old Kings Road project that we said we didn't need. So Mr. Cody and asked, is there any way, now that we know the design features of the widening project, that we're going to need about over $1.1 million more for that project, to transfer the money budgeted from the extension right-of-way to the widening right-of-way? And FDOT said, yes, we will do that. Those dollars were in a different pot of money, and they've gotten acronyms and all that, and I can't keep up with all their terminology, but that actually goes to counties and has to go through county.
That's scope money.
The scope money, okay.
That's
so,
a small count community.
Yes,
small county.
And so it has to actually be approved by the county in which the dollars are being spent in. And so the position of the county administration was, no, those small county dollars have to be spent on rural county roads and not on city roads. And we can go around and around and debate that, and that's
yes,
not worth
right.
debating. But so then it was, were we anticipating spending the $560,000 on the widening? No. But did we want it to go back to Tallahassee and then go spending it somewhere else this fiscal year? No. So we were trying to get it to be. So was that a mistake? Absolutely not. Did we know exactly what the design was going to be and exactly what the right-of-way was going to be until it's complete for the widening? No.
Was okay, it? So let me stop you there 1 second, if I might. So that is where the question was. So, well, they tried to pull that money in because they were short. They miscalculated. So we tried to pull that money out. So that money is now gone.
Yes.
That's the 560. That is sent back.
600,000.
600,000.
The whole 600,000.
And FDOT has now said, okay, we will give you the whole 1.1 1.2, you know, right, whatever it is, that we didn't have, we weren't going to do in this year's budget, but now we do and we are.
Yes.
Okay. So the number didn't change as far as what we needed, the funding changed. The actual yeah, bucket it came out of,
right,
is really what changed. There was no miscalculation. It said, oh my goodness, we're off by 600,000, 500, whatever it was, and now we got to find money somewhere else.
No. Okay. This time last year, we didn't know what it was.
I'm trying to get my own,
right,
head wrapped around this. That's why.
Because it was, you got multiple pots of money and actually multiple phases of a project, it gets complicated.
Right.
And, but the bottom line is that we had a grant scheduled for $600,000 for Old Kings Road this year. We didn't get the $600,000, but we got $1,001,030 in its place.
Okay.
That's total funding. So, as I've indicated to you, I couldn't be happier, and we owe FDOT a big thank you. Otherwise, we'd have to ask them to fund it in the future. And, yeah. But, you know, these dollars for FDOT billion-dollar budgets, there's estimates out there all the time. They never know for sure how much each project is going to cost.
Right.
So as they go along at the end of the year, if they have money that's appropriate for a given project and it's ready to go, as ours is now, then that's lots of times they'll make those adjustments, and that's what happened. And we win in this case.
Sounds good.
I think your point is well taken, that the city of Palm Coast has been well treated by FDOT, and they have gone out of their way to be cooperative with us, to help us, because like every other agency, they have a budget, they have so much money, and we've gotten our share.
Yes.
That's all we can ask for. Any other council questions?
I do have one question. The last paragraph where it says there are 30 parcels identified that would be impacted. Do we already know where those 30 are, and they
yes,
don't bother anybody? There's no one complaining about those 30 parcels?
Anytime you start acquiring property from people, we know what the parcels are. We have not started the process of letting those property owners know. Don't do that unless you have the funding. You may recall, and this is where part of that, we knew this was coming. A few meetings back, you approved the contract with the appraiser to actually give us an appraised cost for or value for each one of these that we then use to approach the property owners. And then the engineers will, there's times when we can, if they really don't want to, we can put a retaining wall up versus a slope down. There's other things that we can do. And sometimes that costs more than it would be to be property, et cetera. But we're not far enough along to tell you if we have anybody that's not wanting to cooperate. 30 parcels, some of them are easements where we don't actually obtain the property, just a right to go in and grade it so the water will flow, those type of things. As we get along through this, and particularly when you deal with commercial businesses, they're going to be very interested, and we've had public meetings, and yes, this is not going to be an easy project. I tried to see if the county would be willing to go and try to acquire right-of-way. Joking. Nobody likes to do the right-of-way part of it. It's not.
The other side of that coin, however, is that the businesses and the clubs on Old King Road are clearly going to benefit from the widening of that road, as are their customers, as are their members, as are their guests.
Once it's finished, yes.
This is not without benefit to everyone along there.
Construction, you know, we all remember Palm Coast Parkway. Construction will be a pain, but once it's finished, yes. This is, and talk about safe, a lot safer. The two-lane busy traffic and people stopping to turn left, it's just this will eliminate most of that. Yes.
Any other council questions? Open the meeting for the public. Anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 5? Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting. Get back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Sir.
Move approval of agenda item number 5, a resolution approving FDOT local agency program supplemental agreement for additional funding in the amount of $1,130,000 for the right-of-way acquisition phase of Old Kings Road widening project.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number 6 was supposed to be the graduation of our most recent Citizens Academy. However, the last of their sessions was supposed to have been Monday night, and the city, in an abundance of caution, not knowing what we were going to get from the storm, canceled that session. So their last session will be next Monday, postponed 1 week, and their graduation will be postponed to the next city council business meeting. You know, you never know. It's easy to second guess and say, oh, it wasn't all that bad. But
it may be your next night business meeting.
Whatever works for them. Okay, this brings us to the public participation portion of the meeting. This is the opportunity for the public to speak on any item not on the agenda. Please come up to the podium, give us your name, and limit your questions or comments to 3 minutes.
Good evening, Al Hurley, Palm Coast. At the one of your meetings, we talked about resolution number 12 about the Palm Coast Beltier Parkway and Royal Palm to 100 about the medium strip and being landscaping and putting up palm trees and whatever. Do we have any idea when the boring company is going to come and start that project, you know, for the irrigation? And the reason why I'm saying this here, because, of course, no one's doing anything. The grass is dead. Seem like during the daytime or the weekends, everybody's now throwing their trash out on the medium strip there, because that's the worst part of the town as far as our beautiful Palm Coast Parkway is concerned. Secondly, who is responsible for the swells in front of PNC Bank, which is Market Street, and that strip will lead into the public supermarket? It seems like I see any type of public works cutting down those trees or whatever. But right now, if anybody goes by there, you can see those weeds are growing like trees right now. So I don't know if that's part of the project or once we start on the medium strip there. But I called code enforcement, and code enforcement told me that they were looking to it, and they said that if it's part of the business, it's their responsibility to do the landscaping as far as the swells. The city cannot go on that property there. But that's just my question, because every time I come out of my street, it looks like the pits. You know? So thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Robert McDonald, Palm Coast. I have a question because I forgot the young lady's name, so I'm going to have to reach out to Mr. Landon. Mr. Landon, can you tell me the name of the young lady who works in your office that is the representative between your office and Wastepro? Sheila?
Diane Torino.
Sen? Okay. Well, we had an issue on Richfield Lane where there was garbage strewn literally all over the street, and we found out where it came from. It came from a garbage can that I got blown over, but instead of the neighbor picking up the garbage, it just laid there. Well, because of the fact that we have a rat that lives in the R section, I started to call people at 9:30 in the morning to find out who was going to come and clean up the garbage, because I had already gone to work. And I called different departments in the city and couldn't get anywhere. Called WastePro. WastePro's response was, well, we don't pick up garbage that's in the street. We only pick up garbage that's in the cans. So, okay. So then I called Mr. Landon's office, and this young lady was extremely helpful. And she said, hold on, I'm going to find out. So she calls WastePro. Well, she must have ripped them a new place, because 5 minutes later, she came back on the phone and she said, a supervisor from Waste Pro is going to go clean up the garbage. So I just want to publicly thank Mr. Landon's office because I called, I didn't know who to call. I called utilities, I called the DPW, I called code enforcement, I called everybody. And nobody could give me a straight answer as to whose responsibility it was. Now, this was garbage that was scattered all over the street. And when my wife went out to go to work, she said there was turkey vultures, hawks, rats, and every other animal eating the garbage and now spreading it even more. So if it wasn't for the young lady in Mr. Landon's office, we don't know how long the garbage would have sat there. So Mr. Landon, whoever the young lady was, please thank her because she said that it's not Waste Pro's responsibility. I mean, I don't understand it. Waste Pro were dumping the garbage, and they saw the garbage in the street. Why didn't they just pick it up and just keep moving? But anyway, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
Jack Cowell, Palm Coast. I want to ask a question and you stop me, so I'll ask now. With the budget, I was reading in the paper with the appraiser from Volusia claimed that, you know, the amount of money that the city is worth real estate wise has gone up. Doesn't that affect our budget? Doesn't that affect the way we get more money? I mean, if the homes go up in value, so do the taxes, if I'm not mistaken, except for the 3%. Doesn't that affect the amount of money that we come into at budget time? Another thing I like, you know, when I was in Europe, they have a law in Europe that says yield to pedestrians. That means red light, green light, amber light, you stop if the pedestrian is in the crosswalk. Just a suggestion, that's all.
Thank you, Jack. Next speaker.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. Age before beauty.
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. Just a little history regarding Beltair near 100. They used to have a sign there that said no fishing. And anybody that's been here at least 20 years knows about it. Where you're talking about, they used to fish right there in the middle of the street. Yeah. That's all.
Thank you.
Hi there. Good evening. I'm Gretchen Smith from the Flagler County Chamber of Commerce, and I'm here to thank you for three things. I'm not here as often as I'd like to be because, like Mr. Landon and Mr. Cody, I'm juggling 15-year-olds between, like, athletic things and extracurriculars, so I don't get here at night as often as I can, but I wanted to thank you for three things. First off, tomorrow we have, I think it's our third or fourth area council meetup with the city of Palm Coast. And it's going to be in Mezzaluna, and we're really excited about it. We're going to be meeting with Barbara Grossman to talk about code enforcement. We've had Bo has been a presenter. We've had Mr. Landon as a presenter. And we're really happy that this is moving along for the chamber, and we're getting a really good response. And it's a great opportunity to bring business and government together, and so we're grateful for that. Second of all, I wanted to say thank you for the work that has been done between the chamber and some of our members with city staff about modifying the landscape architecture guidelines. Again, you know, 10 years has been a long time, and there were a lot of modifications that needed to be made, and we're really grateful that there was such collaboration between a lot of our members and city staff to drive that forward. I think we're pretty much at the end of that process, but again, we're really grateful for that. And finally, a personal shout out to Mayor Nets for all of his participation lately in our ribbon cuttings. You know, Nate McLaughlin had it going on, and he was going on to all the ribbon cuttings, but I think that Mayor Nets has been in there as a real strong contender. So we're grateful for his participation and support. So thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you for all the chamber does.
Mr. Mayor, can I have one more minute?
Council, by consensus?
Good.
Come on, Jack. You didn't use your full three.
I'd like to ask a question, but do you remember when you had that shop in the Saturday shopping, local shopping?
Local business, yeah.
Whatever happened to that? Is that over with, or don't you still do it?
We'll ask the chamber.
Fine, thank you.
Next speaker.
Yeah.
BAC.
Okay.
Good evening, George Mayo, Palm Coast. A couple things. One, I don't remember where they're putting up the shops at Palm Coast at the intersection of 100 and Belterre Boulevard. They were going to put a right turn lane only going northbound on Belterre Boulevard. Is that part of the project? I asked a surveyor out there, and he said no. And reason being, I live in the Z section. Heading north the other day, it took me two lights to get through there. Once you add those shops, it's going to add much more traffic. There were cars behind me that stopped, so it took them three red lights to get through that intersection. So I'm hoping that right turn only, turning on to 100, will be added as they do that. Number two, where the irrigation system on Belterre Parkway, north of Royal Palms, between Rimfire. You always tell the homeowners they should irrigate early in the morning. That irrigation system goes off at noontime, and during the hottest time of the day. It's okay with me, but I don't think it's totally effectual. It should be going off earlier. Number three, with the circus that is going on in the city government of DeBerry, I'm just glad I'm a citizen of Palm Coast, the way we run things, and pretty much unified and civil and everything else. So I just want to say thank you for that. So.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker. If you don't approach the podium, we'll close the public forum meeting. Come back. Let's see if we can answer some of these questions. Do we have a timeline on the installation of the jack and bore or directional boring for the irrigation on Belterre?
This summer?
Summer.
Yeah. I just looked at Steve, and he's not prepared to answer that question. I can tell you that the killing of the grass is a two-step process because you do it once, and then you see what is still there.
And they've gone back and killed.
The other thing I can also tell you is we're doing that in-house. Yeah, the boring is we contracted out. And the Palm Harbor extension, which we have already started, that same crew is up there working. So we're in that busy time of the year. It will occur as quickly as we can. The fact that they've killed the grass means that they've already got it scheduled and starting to work that direction. We'd have to look and see exactly where the gentleman's talking about there at Marketplace.
We've had that kind of issue on Palm Coast Parkway where who's responsible for the swales? Is it the local business in the city? We'll look into that.
Yeah, just like your residents, it's usually the local business. I mean, you know, the city doesn't come mow your swell. We don't mow people's swell in front of their business or their residents. But if it is something code needs to look at or if it is our responsibility, we'll take a look at it.
Pass along the thanks for WastePro. I would comment, though, that our contract with WastePro, they pick up the garbage cans, the trash containers. Their contract does not specify that they pick up odds and ends on the street. However, in this case, it sounds like they made a concession on our behalf, and thanks to Waste Pro and thanks to whoever it was in your office. And
yeah, if I could comment on that one. First of all, it's the homeowner's responsibility to make sure it stays in the can, and if it doesn't, it's the homeowner's responsibility to clean it up. I want to make that real clear. It's your trash. It should stay in the can or in the bag. In this case, yes. Waste Pro, actually quite frequently, will say, yeah, it's easier, better for us to just go take care of it than to fight about who's supposed to take care of whose fault it is. So my hat's off to Waste Pro. The lady in the office, one of the reasons I don't give you a name, because it could be one of three or four, one of those is sitting right next to Steve down there. So
yes. Take credit. What the heck?
It's hard to say who it is, because they're all trained to help out residents when it comes to trash. Code enforcement, if it's a homeowner, they're going to go deal with it. If it's our responsibility because it's out in the street, then we got public works going on out there. But for the most part, I like the solution in this case, or very much so in this case.
Then we had a question, and it's a good question. As property values go up, as the assessed values go up, doesn't that generate more money for the city, and doesn't that increase revenues, and doesn't that impact the budget? And the answer is yes. And that's part of Chris's projections. I suspect he's very conservative because we really don't know how much property values go up. But I'd like to quote something that the first mayor of Palm Coast used to like to say. He said, for every dollar that the resident pays in taxes, they get $1.67 worth of services. For every dollar that the retail, commercial, and industrial taxpayer pays, they get 75 cents worth of services. A balance, and if you talk to city planners across the nation, they will tell you that a good balance in your tax base, and it varies, but they'll say 70% residential, 30% retail, commercial, industrial, or something along that order of magnitude. Simply adding more houses does not necessarily keep pace with budget demands because the amount of services that residential customers get compared to commercial. The other thing that Chris, of course, reminds us of all the time, yes, we've got some nice development going on in Island Walk, and we've got that development that's just getting started on Belterra and 100. But keep in mind, there's a year lag from the time they're completed before we enjoy any tax revenues from them. Meanwhile, they will be receiving services. Yield sign, don't we wish that people would just do what they're supposed to do? And I remember the fishing, no fishing signs on Belterre. There's a long history behind that. To the Chamber of Commerce, thank you. This is an issue where the Chamber and the city, we have mutual interests here. As they help their local businesses expand and grow, that helps the city expand and grow. You talk to the early residents of Palm Coast who complained bitterly about having to drive to St. Augustine or Daytona to do their shopping. Now you can do most of it right here. The Shop Local campaign, Bo, I think that was Business Assistance Center?
Sure, it's Shop Local and Small Business Saturday. So in conjunction with the Chamber, it's kind of a nationally recognized the Saturday after Black Friday. Instead of just going to malls or shopping on Amazon on Cyber Monday, there's Small Business Saturday. So that's where we really hit our marketing efforts to capitalize on American Express and their advertising and also with the Chamber. So, and every time we speak to citizens or a Citizens Academy, we always try to encourage them to shop local and refer clients to the BAC for assistance. So,
shopping local is more than just a nice thing to say. It helps our businesses stay open and expand, but also every dollar that you spend in Palm Coast generates sales tax that comes back to Palm Coast and to Flagler County. Shop local whenever you possibly can. State Road 100 and Belterre turning lane. I was under the impression there was going to be a turn lane there, right turn lane.
I have. There's more rumors get started by surveyors out in the field than I think anybody else.
Yes, that is definitely part of the plans and exactly how it all fits in. I don't know the timing, but yes, there will be a right turn lane associated with that. City Council's already approved the agreements and everything that their impact fees will go towards paying for that. And the plat included the necessary right-of-way. So everything's in motion. It's just a matter of having it happen. And the moral of the story is don't always believe whatever your surveyor tells you.
And the last comment, the irrigation system on Belterre, the timing during the daytime. I believe that's all reclaimed water. Richard, is that exempt from the 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.?
But that's bad for the grass, though. I mean, to run the water, I thought, in the daytime burns the grass.
No, but you get more evaporation. Something to look at. And from a don't do as I do as I say point of view, if we want our residents to obey the watering regulations, we ought to try to time the cities the same
more
way.
More perception and image problem. Yeah.
And when you're riding your motorcycle down Belterre, it's really odd. Because it smells and, you know, you get home.
Trying to cool you off. Cool you off.
I think that covers all the items that were raised by the public. This brings us to discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Mr. Nobile, why don't we start with you, sir?
Okay. Two simple things. One, can I get or can the council get some more in-depth information as to the high number of 911 calls out of Ralph Carter Park? There seemed to be a high number, and they could be medical. You know, we just don't know. I don't know. I'd like to see.
I can already give it to you.
Oh, you can't?
We have one of those blue lights out there, and if it's just a 911 call that you're seeing, someone is pushing the blue light and running.
Nice.
And it's,
but it's a crime then. No.
It's a problem, but it's if it's actually they're hitting it and it's for legitimate reasons, the report will show what that legitimate call is for.
So if it just says 911, then it was just a blue light. We got out there, didn't see anything.
Yep.
Okay, good. Second question. I don't know if you're going to deal with this in your portion, Mr. Landon, but how did the meeting go today with county?
Regarding fire station?
Fire station 21, yeah.
Yeah, it was a very short discussion about Fire Station 22.
22,
yes. It's amazing how rumors get things stirred up, and then when they hear the facts, it's like, oh, well, then that's okay. So we sat down with county administrator and the fire chiefs, and they had the were under the understanding we weren't going to let their paramedics come back after the remodeling, which was not the case at all. The station right now has five firefighter/EMT staff in it. When we get finished, it will still have five bunks, and it's going to be rearranged. The kitchen is going to be different. The lieutenant's going to have his office bunk area, and the whether you're county or city, you're going to be in the bunk room. And they were very comfortable with that. That's not the rumor they heard. They heard that we were going to not let them come back in.
Well, I think that came from the discussion we had at one of our workshops where we kind of said, couldn't we ask them if they would move? I know there was nothing saying we're making it so you can't.
Exactly. We said and told them that, too. The option was there's Fire Station 24 had more room, had individual bunk rooms, our new design, and that is always available.
Yeah.
But during our workshops, we talked about we weren't going to require them to move out of that
right.
station. And
not if we left it to Bill McGuire, though.
Yeah. Well, there's you could sit here and have a debate as to where the best location. The fact of it is many ambulances, particularly the private ambulance companies, they don't have a station they're stationed out of. They park in parking lots and wherever. The other thing we did is talked about up to 8 weeks during construction that they can't be there and how the community center right across the street, they can park there, they can use those restrooms, they got a little kitchenette in there, they can go have lunch, and so
It was, like I said, about 20-minute discussion that as soon as you start communicating, it goes a whole lot better.
Better, okay. But I just didn't like, I started hearing things like, building new, and I just sat and I thought, we don't need to build anything new right now, just because we're tight when we don't have to be tight. But I'd like, there were some numbers thrown around also, like moving 2 miles will increase the call time 6 minutes, and I thought, well, in that case, it'd take an hour to get to, up north in Matanzas. But what I don't want to do is get into the snip and snap back and forth again and just say, let's just make sure we're civil and we're happy and we want what's best for the residents, both physically with the response and financially also, fiscally. We don't want to waste their money or
And yes, absolutely. I mean, this makes, it makes no sense to, because they were totally in agreement that the building needs to be remodeled and updated.
Yeah.
We scheduled this discussion over a month ago now. Once the plans were finalized and everything. Once again, it's very typical. Once you sit down, all that kind of rhetoric goes away, and you communicate. We did have some preliminary discussions about long-term in the future.
Yeah.
Same kind of conversation City Council had, that eventually this building very likely will need to be replaced. And best location, some options at that location. I mean, there's all sorts of discussions, but nothing other than just preliminary conversation that...
Okay. That but we're all happy. Everybody's good with what's going to come out of the renovation component.
Yes. I heard... Once they heard the facts and the options we gave them, there was no objection at all from their standpoint.
Super. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. DiLorenzo.
I don't expect you to know this... off your head, so just if you can get back to me or maybe at the next workshop you comment on it. Had a couple, it's been springtime, people are cleaning up their yards, and I've had a few people talk about the yard waste pickup and maybe, hey, Waste Pro used to pick up that amount, but now they want to charge me $75, and I had to do it one other time, and it was only $50, and now it's $75. I know we haven't changed our policy, and I know we haven't changed our contract. So, did anything change? Is it just...
Mr. DiLorenzo, I'm very prepared to talk about that. because, there is first of all, let me describe the rules. The rules is 12 cubic yards is what the maximum you're supposed to put out, because, it is a volume thing, and you can't have, a whole tree you put out there and expect them to be able to haul it away. So there is a limit, number one. Number two is that if you hire a contractor, a landscape contractor, maintenance person, they're supposed to haul it away for you. And that is the rules, and the ones that have been here a while know that. We need to work harder on making sure they do know that you can't take your bags, your debris, and put it on the curb if you're a contractor getting paid to haul it away. So those are the rules we play by. I have actually talked to the management at Waste Pro and said, I have not had as many complaints until recently that reached my level on why we're not picking up, which seems to be pretty typical. And I've seen some pictures, and I've told them that their drivers are either being told to get tougher on their standards, or they're just doing that on their own. But there are times when I've seen where there was no way they shouldn't have picked it up. And that lady, that nice lady in my office, whoever she is, they've been instructed to have the supervisor go out there and double-check it. And they should be, when it's close, they should be picking it up. I would encourage anybody to contact my office, because this is an issue that we think Waste Pro, and once again, we've talked to their management, is not
making good judgment. We have a lot of good things that Waste Pro does, and been very fortunate. Don't know why all of a sudden springtime we're seeing this.
12 cubic yards is pretty significant.
Yes,
that's not a little. That's not a few leaves here and there. That's a pretty significant size.
Right. You know, you take a cube of 12 by 12 by 12, and you stack 12. You know, I mean. One yardstick by one
by three,
one, three by
12,
four, yeah. and that's kind of what it is. So I would encourage people to call us. Now, there are times when I look at it and go, well, there's no way they're going to pick that up, and they're going to have to hire somebody. It could be Waste Pro or anybody else to pick it up. So we're trying to get on top of it and see if we can't make sure that we're being as generous as possible with the rules for the residents. You know, shortly you're going to see a presentation on renewing the contract, and we're already talking about how can we put language in there to try to help avoid this. It's difficult to, because you can't have just unlimited.
Right.
But on the other hand, to get your brains around what is 12 cubic yards or 14 or 10 or whatever it is tough. But we're going to see what other people do and see if we can't help solve the
remember
issue.
Several years ago at a Florida League of Cities conference, there was a presentation by somebody, and I can't remember the city, but he said, I am proud to say that we have the most expensive waste collection of any place in Florida. It's a question of balancing. If you've got a truck that has a certain capacity and you're given going this down this street, you can't fill the one truck at one house and then skip everybody else's. So you have to apportion it.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to, you can say unlimited. But you're going to pay for
it.
You know, everybody's going to pay for that because they're going to have to. And Mayor, as you said, you know, if they fill up the truck on one house and they've got to go dump that, can they actually get through all the houses in their route, and then they have to put in a different route or an additional route. So, yeah, there's costs associated with it. We have a good program here overall. All the ways. And I'll put a plug in for even the monthly hazardous, household hazardous waste, you know, your oils, your paints, those, you know, kind of things you'd have in the kitchen.
That's a very unusual, very rare program.
Yes.
And I'm glad we've got it.
And that's on a call, and they will come on the Saturday. They're in your neighborhood. You put it not on the curb, because we don't want the hazard on the curb, but you put it up by your garage, and they'll come and pick that up if you call in advance and it meets the criteria. So there's a lot of good things about it. We've got this one little hiccup going. I don't know if it's one driver or what it is, but
I have heard a few as well.
Yep. So. I have
still on council comments. Ms. Shipley?
No.
Okay. Discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Nothing this evening, Mr. Mayor.
Discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda.
I feel like I've talked quite a bit. I will say a couple things about safety. We had a rain event yesterday. It was a tropical storm, but for us it turned out to be a rain event. And we were prepared, and we treated it seriously. Always warn our citizens that the next one we may not be so fortunate, so don't take these lightly just because this one was a little bit of rain. And second thing is today's the last day of schools for our K-12 folks, so we're going to have kids out there. So please be safe with all the activities having kids at home during the summer. Good thing is they're going to start early this coming fall or August, actually. So that's a good thing, getting back to school. Mayor, that's all I have for the evening.
Motion to adjourn.